First of all, Senate Bill 532 will be rolled over to the next regularly scheduled hearing. Senate Bill 347 will be rolled over to the next regularly scheduled hearing. Senate Bill 699 will be scheduled over, will be rolled over to the next regularly scheduled hearing. I do want to open a work session on Senate Bill 245 briefly to take care of this bill, and then we'll move to the main attraction, House Bill 3038.
Can you move all the committee over to the next committee?
Senator Atkinson wants to move all of the bills over to the next regularly scheduled hearing. I kind of like that idea, actually. But Randy Tucker, do you want to come up on the 245?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is anybody else here on 245?
I know John Chandler is in the building.
Wait, you guys were here on 699? I'm sorry, guys. I had to bring you in this morning. Okay, go ahead, Ren.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 245 is the bill. You've looked at this before. It's brought to you to... We brought this bill forward to address a problem that we have... I'm sorry, Randy Tucker, Metro Legislative Affairs Manager. This bill is brought to you to address an issue that we've got in the Metro area. Metro is the only jurisdiction in the state that is required to evaluate its urban growth boundary every 5 years. And while we've been complying with that requirement, it's caused a great deal of difficulty for us. It's very costly to do the analysis of the urban growth boundary, and it's the work that the effort that it takes is keeping us from doing the planning that we need to do to for the inside of the urban growth boundary, the land has already been brought in to get that brought online. So what these amendments here do is simply clean up the original bill, clean up the language of the original bill, and scale it back from the original bill would have extended the cycle from 5 years to 10. These amendments extend it from 5 years to 7. We've been before you before, as you know, talking about a much more complicated package of amendments to this bill, and we're still in discussion with members of the development community in the Portland area and also local governments in our region, and we're going to continue those discussions, but we'd appreciate the opportunity to move this bill forward over to the House so those discussions can continue.
Okay. Now, Randy, I know one time the home builders and you were presenting one set of amendments. John Chandler isn't here today. I had some... Oh, there he is. Mr. Chandler.
Come back.
I told you he was here.
Come back. Welcome.
Excellent. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you didn't have to wake up earlier than you had to.
You mean he's woke up yet?
245-3. John...
Holy mackerel. I brought two copies up, just
thank
case.
You. My understanding from our little muttering in the hall yesterday is that you're not going to be here today opposing them.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, New York and Oregon Home Builders, would you have stopped after not going to be here today? I would have been probably better off. I'll give you sort of the process for the big part. No, we're not going to oppose these. We do not like this bill as drafted. If it stayed in this form, we would oppose it vigorously. But for purposes of continuing conversation with our good friends and occasional partners at Metro, we're happy to keep the conversation going.
Okay. That sounds like another bill we did recently.
Very similar. A lot of big pattern developing here.
Okay. Questions from the committee for either one of these witnesses? The committee is a little bit stunned by all this.
In advance of a question, may I answer in the spirit of movies done these days? The answer would be 42.
Pretty like this.
All right. Okay, thank you very much. Our committee is going to have to gather some steam on this one. Can you vote yes on this?
We can't make it right on our side.
All right. Well, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 245, and except we'll roll this over to the next regularly scheduled hearing for this committee. So that's where we are. Let's open a
everybody should get to work early.
A public hearing on House Bill 3038. And Senator Westland, Representative Roblin, would you two like to come up? And then after this, we'll have Willie Tiffany kind of organize the panels. Thank you.
Come on, that was Metro.
I know, but it's an oath of office to me to serve in the Senate.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That's my problem.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Ben Westland.
Who?
I guess all I should have to say is District 27, fastest growing district in the state, Senator Atkinson.
But you were until that court decision about the water, Senator.
Well, two court decisions, Mr. Chair, and we're here to talk about one of them today. I am here obviously in support of House Bill 3038. As you all know very well, water is at a premium in Oregon. It is a commodity. It is what gives it value. And all users in Oregon are working to conserve and better manage their water resources. In Central Oregon, this has meant that each of the eight cities in my region has adopted aggressive conservation and management plans. The testimony you'll hear today, later today from Ben, will tell you of the tremendous successes, exceptional successes, they have had in reducing per capita water consumption. Redmond, Manders, Pineville, and all of my other cities are pursuing the same approach. They are to be complemented. We are also facing some significant growth challenges throughout the rest of the region. Bend is now over 66,000 people. Redmond has topped out at over 20, and the whole region is growing by approximately 10 to 15% annually. Thus, we are forced to plan for this future growth, and water is certainly the key. What the appeals court decision functionally did is raise the possibility, indeed probability, that this careful, long-term planning approach, something that is key to our entire land use system, will be thrown out. Remember, state law requires communities to plan for 20 years of growth. Let me say that again. State law requires municipalities to plan for 20 years of growth. But how can they comply with these planning statutes if the water that is required for their planning is unavailable? This bill is about preserving our land use planning system and preserving some of the level of rationality and common sense in that process. I am very proud of all the members of our community who have embraced not only their planning responsibilities, but also the conservation responsibilities that are incumbent upon all of those that live in the Deschutes Basin. Cities, irrigation districts, agricultural users, conservation groups, the tribes, and others have formed a terrific, absolutely wonderful group, the Deschutes Basin Alliance, whose main goal is to better manage the finite supply of water in the basin. Working together, they believe they can leave more water in the system, especially in the highly impacted Middle Deschutes. This bill helps ensure that that process continues. It gives cities the certainty they need to do careful planning and time-proven conservation efforts. Their work is vital to this effort. Without this bill, Bend, as an example, has less than 5 years of water and will have to scramble simply to meet existing needs. Careful planning will be out the window. I do want to address one of the arguments that has been used against this bill. The Water Resources Commission has set very clear rules that define good cause and prevent injury to other users, including in-stream users. Thus, claims that this bill will allow rivers to be drained by communities who have large uncertified water rights are simply incorrect. I hold out as a proof of this that this, to date, has not happened in any shape or form. In fact, by putting the conservation and management rules into statutes, we will see more through the efforts to conserve water in this state. That's a very positive development and one to be encouraged. Finally, take a look at the wide variety of groups who support this bill. Cities, unions, home builders, special districts, agricultural interests. They're all on board because they recognize this is a very valuable and long-term approach to solving a very difficult problem. As a result, I certainly urge and encourage your very strong support of House Bill 3038. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Chair Wingo and the rest of the committee for the opportunity to come here and speak about an issue that's very, very important to me. My name is Arnie Roblin, for the record. I am representative from District 9 in Coos Bay, Oregon. Prior to being elected to this office, I was a member of the Coos Bay North Bend Water Board for the previous 8 years. And I wanted to take the opportunity, what Senator Westland has just spoken of, I'm not going to repeat those issues because I think he did an exceptionally good job of that. This bill passed in the House 53-4, and it has strong bipartisan support for a lot of reasons. But what I want to do is give you a quick little brief explanation from my point of view, what happened in the Coos Bay North Bend Water Board suit that resulted in the need for this bill, from a perspective of a person who was there working to make sure that a supply of water was available in a community. We are not like Bend. We would be on the opposite side of that. We are not growing very quickly. We hope to grow. We need to make sure that we have available the water and other natural resources necessary to encourage industry to come to our area. But a little brief history, I think, is important for the committee to understand why a 20-year window and the ability to plan and to build and to produce, and even more so, to understand what it takes to perfect that water right so that you can actually start using the water in today's climate. And from my perspective, I think it is an appropriate climate where we really do have to prove both the need and what we need to do and how we need to use the water. But just so you have a little understanding, the 10 Mile Creek water right, the original application request was for 36.6 cubic feet per second, or about 25 million gallons per day on a 365-day-a-year basis. When we finally received the permit from the Oregon Water Resources Department, it had been modified through the process to limit withdrawal from November 1 to March 31st at a rate of 23.2 CFS, or 14 million gallons per day, and then only after the stream was flowing at 50 CFS and is open to the ocean. As the board pursued the development, it may see further restrictions as it seeks federal permits through the National Environmental Policy Act, this process and its associated public interest review. So the option of actually getting and using the water, you really do have a public process. And let me go through that process with respect to 10 Mile Creek history. In December of 1990, let's go back to the beginning. In March of 1990, the application for 38.68 or 25 million gallons a day was entered. December of 1993, Oregon Water Resource Department gave a technical, a negative technical review. February of 1994, the applicant clarified his application. April of 1995, OWRD issued second technical review, water limited during certain months. June of 1995, objections filed with OWRD. March of 1996, applicant modified application to satisfy some of the objectives, further reducing the water right. December of 1997, OWRD issued proposed final order with conditions. December of 1999, contested case hearing number one. January 2000, contested case hearing number two. August 2000, contested case hearing number three. August 2000, final order from the administrative law judge. December 2000, protest to OWRC upheld. December 2002, briefs to the Court of Appeals. April 2003, argued before the Court of Appeals. April 2004, Court of Appeals decision overturning the ALJ, the Administrative Law Judge's decision. January 2005, argued before the Supreme Court. The amount of money and effort that our water board had put into this issue shows a good faith effort to try to perfect this water right. At the same time, we have been in court much longer than the 5 years necessary in the current, the way that the judge has ruled. to have built anything. During the litigation, you really aren't putting anything in the water. And so we lost this water right during that appeal because we had not perfected the right in 5 years. I contend there was no way we could have perfected that right. The process has done its job. It had limited the amount of water that we could take and use. They had looked at all the evidence that we presented about growth and the prospects of growth, and until the decision was made on a ruling that overturned over 50 years of practice in water rights for municipalities, we were on our way to getting to the point where we could have built the pumps and the station to move the water, to have it accessible to future growth for Coos Bay. So I think this bill, 3038, is a great attempt at coming up with steps and procedures which will allow for appropriate growth over time. And I really want to say that we do need to continue to do the to go after issues for conservation of the water that we have. This is, I believe, the number one issue for growth and for dealing with the future of our state. Water is going to be a big issue. And if municipalities can't plan, what you'll see is more and more people drilling wells so they have water for their own use in their own particular home or industry. And I'm very concerned about the aquifer, as we have in the metropolitan areas in particular paved over the ground and built houses and other things. The ability to refresh that aquifer becomes less and less. And if we put more strain on it because we readjust what municipalities and people have to do to get water, we only cause greater and greater problems. So I encourage you to truly look carefully at this bill, and I support 3038. And I am here willing to answer any questions that you might have. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Senator Byron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like both of you, I guess, to respond. I always have a fundamental problem in this building when we do things to treat government entities different than people. And this bill, again, we are treating government entities different than people. And I'd like to get your response to that. Why is that a good idea, and why is it good public policy to have to treat a government entity one way and the average citizen another?
Well, thank you, Senator Byer, for the record, Ben Winston. First of all, if you want to take government in the larger sense, government is the people, and government is the representative of the people. So if you want to take it from that standpoint, the government entities, whether it be county, city, or indeed state, are the people. So when you start putting in the context of separating government from the people, I think we go down a difficult and rocky road. I understand the thrust of your question and have some of the same concerns and suspicions of government from time to time. But if you also look at it from the standpoint, particularly as we're talking here today about municipalities, the municipalities, more than your and my beloved agriculture even, I wish that wasn't so, but in current economic climates and markets, the municipalities are really the economic engines of this state. And the two commodities that fuel them more than anything else, in addition to the talent of our citizens, are two. I mean, power and water. And if we curtail access to our city's ability to rationally and grow in a managed and prudent fashion to plan, or we're stifling the economic engines of this state and the ability of the state to move forward.
I concur with Senator Weston, but let me go back to the history of the West. You know, that there's the old saying, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. And I think that if you really want to have government do what it's supposed to do, which is to help get groups of people together to work together for the common good, then things like managing water is an essential characteristic of what government should be doing to make sure that we don't fight over that minimum resource, but rather work together to provide a resource for all the people in the community in one system. And I think this is one of those places where government comes together. Interestingly, in our own community, there's a statute in Oregon law that helped provide for the Coos Bay North Bend Water Board, because there were these little municipal private water companies who came together and gave it to these two cities. Our two cities don't necessarily always get along. We voted a number of times to combine Coos Bay North Bend. However, on this particular issue, we've had a good standing relationship for the past 50 years with two municipalities, with people from both members working together to provide a resource that people must have. And I think it has shown the ability to cooperate and work together to provide something that we all need. And so I see this particular issue as one of those where government is necessary so that we don't have the fighting, the squabbling, the other issues with water. And that's why I think, since these municipalities are representing a large group of people, the ability to grow, the ability to do things that we need to do as a government, water is an important issue, and that's why I think here it is different.
Well, Senator Westland, with your response, why would you limit this only to municipal water systems, and why would you not include irrigation districts and give them 20 years to build a project?
I think twofold, or two answers to your question, Senator. One is that irrigation districts haven't undergone the litigation process that municipalities have recently entered into. And irrigation districts are not faced, regrettably, but they legitimately are not faced with an increasing agricultural land base that they have to supply more and more and more water to. I mean, irrigation districts do not face the same challenges, the same logistical impacts of providing water, nor are they required to, by statute, as municipalities are, to provide water in a planning process that's part of Oregon's land use system. So short answer to the question is that no irrigation district that I'm aware of in the state is faced with the, let me say regrettably, but no irrigation district is faced with an expanding land base where they are required to add additional cubic feet and adjudicated water rights to their systems.
Would you like me to tell you about one?
There was one?
Mr. Chair, there's a water irrigation district in my area that they are working to build a project, and they don't have 20 years. They don't get 20 years to build it. They are, you know, it's a brand new irrigation district. They're in a limited groundwater area. The farmers there are prohibited from growing wells, using wells. They have temporary water permits in the wells that they currently had. They don't get 20 years. Why should a city get 20 years?
Well, I'd have to be familiar with that specific irrigation district, Senator, to more fully answer your question. I'm glad to know that there's an irrigation district that is expanding, but are they using additional water?
Mr. Chair, in response, yeah, they have no water now. They're out looking for water.
But I am assuming that once the project is complete, that the groundwater adjudication rights will be vacated.
Yeah, they have temporary permits in the water, in their groundwater.
So, okay, but not to bandy the issue, but they are then using no additional new water.
Mr. Chair, this is probably a debate we don't need to have here, but the answer is no, that's not correct, because they are they have formed irrigation districts and they're bringing in lands that currently have no water available to them.
Okay.
Well, I think it probably is a debate for elsewhere, but it's an interesting issue, Senator Beyer. Anything else from the committee? Senator Shields?
Yeah, I guess this question would be for both of you. I'm a co-sponsor of the bill. It's, you know, all too typical. Somebody comes racing up in those early weeks of session and gives you a two-line glossy on what the bill does, and you say, oh, okay, sign it, and then you're surprised later to find your name on a bill. It happens a lot. But then you start hearing from the environmental community, and then I've heard from the cities in my district and so on, and the League of Cities and so on, and you end up truly conflicted around the environmental issues. And I just would like you, I perceive that both of you have a real conscious concern about the environment, and I'm thinking, you know, what's the matter with gathering more facts, more environmental data than we have? I mean, it seems to me we lack a lot when it comes to knowing how much water is out there, how much is available. You get a resource that you kind of nail down and you don't use it for years. Shouldn't you have to, you know, have the latest facts as you move forward? I just wanted some reaction to that kind of thing. I'm just learning about the bill. I haven't committed myself.
Well, thanks for the question, Senator Shields. For the record, I would just like to state that I have never, in a hurried moment rushing down the hall, signed on a bill that I was never completely familiar with. The
right.
Nor regret it later. I mean, that's just never happened to me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend.
Yeah. With regard to your question, which I appreciate, the time for studying is done. In the Deschutes Basin, which I can speak with most authority, Martha Pagel, about eight years ago now, initiated the Deschutes Basin groundwater study. It is one of the best scientific presentations on hydrology that has ever been done. The Deschutes River is one of the most studied rivers in the world. We know where the water is, where it goes, in what amounts, with two exceptions. One is Opal Springs that comes out of the side of the Crooked River Canyon at the rate of 140,000 gallons a minute, and the other is the Metolius. We can't figure out where that water comes from. We just know it's a lot, and we're glad it's there. But with the water that we can map, there is without question one of the largest aquifers per population sitting under Deschutes County that very importantly flows functionally in a northeasterly direction towards Prineville and Crooked River Gorge, hooks a very hard left-hand turn as it approaches the gorge and subs into Lake Billy Chinook. Therefore, all of that aquifer eventually ends up back in the Deschutes and is a very large contributor to the flows in the lower Deschutes. In fact, there is more water flowing over the Cottonwood Weir, which was established in 1898, today than there was in 1898. So I think we're blessed in the Deschutes Basin with excellent hydrology. Imagine, if you will, a 55-gallon drum or barrel sitting in front of us. If you took the population of Bend, fastest growing city in the state, and right at just about half of the total population of Deschutes County, but if you just took Bend, ran the projected population out to 2020 and doubled it, in that 55-gallon barrel, you'd have about 2 inches of water use taken out of the chutes. I mean, relative volume to that 55-gallon barrel. Ag use takes about another 18 inches. Municipal demand for municipal water is minuscule compared to the dollars that it produces, the quality of lives it enriches, and the ability of this state to move forward, grow, and do what is really, back to Senator Byer's question, a core responsibility of government, and that is allow people, give them the opportunity to exercise very fundamental core principle, their will to achieve, their ability to be individuals, to be Oregonians, to be Americans, to become what they, as individuals, want to become. Cities allow that to happen, and municipal water use is minuscule in relation to that cost.
Senator Shields, I also appreciate this question. My answer, and having been on the water board and studied this issue a lot, Coos Bay, I can give you the same information. You know, we have wells in the dunes, and they are regulated by the federal government, and we have to reapply for those permits and go through an extensive scientific study about how much water is in the dunes and so on. We built a new dam, one of the only dams built in Oregon, to save more of our rainwater, because we're basically, we live off our rainwater. And so we've done a lot of studies, so I have a fair amount of information. But my biggest answer to this particular bill and this question is there is no more, in my opinion, surface water left in Oregon. In 1990, when we applied for our water permit, we got in line for this permit, and then they worked through the process. In the early 90s, I think it was 92, Oregon Fish and Wildlife, I think wisely, put requests for almost every on every available stream and surface water resource, they ask for water rights, and so they stand in line behind these municipalities and others if the water is made available. And so the ability after if in fact municipal water rights that are in place now go away and they have to reapply, they will go behind the line on the water rights that are being requested. And so I think the issue is about reallocation of those water rights. And in fact, have we done the things, and I believe we have, that indicate this is water that we are reserving for the people of Oregon, for growth in these municipalities, and in making sure that we do plan appropriately for the development of urban areas, as opposed to sending everybody out to find their own well. I think this is an issue, personally, that goes to the heart of land use planning in Oregon. Water will be those issues. And I think that municipalities have, because they were required to, planned well, done studies, and done things. Do I think that we have an obligation to continue to figure out exactly how much water is being used in the state and do the things that we need to do to realize how much water there is there and do the science to find out what's available in the future in groundwater and other sources? Absolutely. And I think there are bills up and around to do just those things, to start monitoring more closely. Municipalities are the group that is doing that. You can ask them how much water their water right is, how much they're using. They will tell you that, because that's part of the requirement. And we know the flows as it comes and goes. The issue that we have in Oregon is that we are very dependent water-wise on the weather conditions and so on. In Coos Bay, before we ended up, we were able to build the dam, we almost ran out of water cyclically, probably every 5 years, because of the weather conditions. Our dam held enough water to get us through a year, but if the rains didn't start, we were in real trouble. And we have done a number of times in my 32 years in Coos Bay, we're put on alert to start conserving water greater. So we have always worked at conserving water. And if you look at the water use,
Representative Wilbur, we have a lot of people on our list here. Right. I just want to.
But that's why sure we get I feel everybody. Strongly about this one. Sorry about that.
Well, that's thank okay. You. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thanks for your testimony, and we're going to be spending a lot of time on this. Roy, before we get to your panel, I'd like to bring up Glenn Kirkpatrick, who says he needs to leave by 8:45. So you got just a few minutes.
Thank you, Senator Ringo. Yes. I'm a fisherman, and
for the record, you are?
My name is Glenn Kirkpatrick, and I'm just here representing myself.
Okay.
I'm a fisherman. I'm active on some watershed councils, and I'm doing some salmon restoration work. And I heard a lot just recently about the conservation plans, and I think everybody knows that the conservation plans required by water resources really aren't worth the paper they're written on, and I just wanted to take exception to that. HB 3038 will allow new water withdrawals to begin in the future based on permits issued today, regardless of how conditions, values, and technology may change. Common sense dictates this will lead to overcommitting of resources. As an example, a current example of the situation HB 3038 will lead to is Drift Creek on the Oregon coast. Kernville Glen Eden Beach Water District is seeking to divert water from Drift Creek under permits issued in 1963 and 1967. The diversion is from critical salmon habitat where ODFW resource managers do not want to remove water. Kernville Glen Eden Beach District cannot use the water and wants to sell the excess to Lincoln City at a cost of over $1 million. Lincoln City has other lower cost and more sustainable alternatives to meet water needs, yet they are actively pursuing Drift Creek because of the 1963 and 1967 permits for the water withdrawals. HB 3038 will allow municipal water users to reserve water ahead of the more immediate needs of others based on speculation and not demonstrable need. Water withdrawals will be based on application priority dates, not on the need or environmental impact. HB 3038 will allow municipalities to commit water resources without proper public input and amounts to an end run of the resource protection laws. HB 3038 is bad public policy. HB 3038 will severely hinder salmon restoration efforts throughout the state. Please keep Oregon's reputation as an environmentally responsible state. Please help protect our natural heritage. HB 3038 should not be passed in its current form. And I have other examples, and I got to run, but I really appreciate the opportunity to come here and give you my opinion.
Well, thank you very much. Hang on just a minute.
Any questions?
Other questions from the committee? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Rui Tiffany and Rick Glick, Todd. Excuse me. I love my allergies. Todd Heidgarten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
For the record, I'm Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities. We very much appreciate the opportunity to come talk to you about this issue, a very, very important issue for you today. I have submitted a number of pieces of written testimony to help kind of clarify some of the issues, my personal written testimony. Also testimony from AFSCME, Ralph Groner. I had a doctor's appointment this morning, wanted to testify, couldn't be here. I told him I would submit that for him. Additionally, I've submitted this document. It's a white paper drafted in the year 2000 on long-term water supply planning, and I'll get to that in a moment. Also, I've provided you a copy of this document, which is a guidance manual for the creation of water management and conservation plans, and hopefully they'll be relevant documents as we move through this process. I'd also like to say, Senator Beyer, that Mr. Glick in his testimony will get directly at your question, and hopefully Senator Shields will get at your questions as well through the panel discussion. I'm just going to provide a brief background on why we're here, but let me introduce the panel. To my right is Rick Glick, attorney at Davis Wright Tremaine, works with a number of municipal water suppliers and helped us draft this legislation, can talk about what it actually does. On my far right is Todd Heikergen from the Tualatin Valley Water District, who also chairs the Legislative Committee for Special Districts, but he is going to talk about water development from a municipal standpoint. Our next panel includes Lauren Stickle from the Portland Water Bureau, senior planner there, to talk about water planning in general. And then we have Paul Eckley from the City of Salem to talk about integrated planning, specifically how Salem is approaching this process, to give you a real-life example. And then Tom Hickman from the City of Bend, Senator Westland referred to that testimony, to actually talk about the plan elements in one of these Division 86, or what's called water management and conservation plans. To kind of quickly give you just a little bit of background, Western Water Law, as you all know, focuses on the doctrine of prior appropriation, basically first in time, first in right. Throughout the West, Western Water Law has also held a notion of what's called the growing communities doctrine. And that recognizes that municipalities are unique water users given the construct of first in time, first in right, that municipalities grow over time and do have a duty to serve their constituency and need longer term water rights to provide for that growth. That's why I provided you this document. It also it talks about water supply planning in general, but the second section of this document specifically talks about the growing communities doctrine and cites how that is developed in other states in the West, from New Mexico, Colorado, Idaho. Virtually every Western state has some sort form of the growing communities doctrine, either in statute or through case law. In the past, in Oregon, the Oregon Water Resources Department has interpreted this need, the growing community doctrine, through the issuance of permit extensions for municipalities. In other words, in the past, when a municipality applied for a water right and was granted a water right, the department perceived that that utility would have as enough time as they needed to develop that water right, and they would do that by the issuance of a permit extension upon request every 5 years. And that was department policy in their interpretation of the statute, that after every 5 years they would basically ask the utility, would you like an extension of time? Do you need an extension of time to develop that water? And if the utility
said yes, we need more time to develop that water,
it was granted. That process does not exist in law today anymore. And this was based on a 1997 Attorney General's opinion, which basically said to the Water Resources Department, for all water right holders, you must, if you're going to issue an extension of time, you must issue an extension of time that it's actually going to take for that entity to develop that water, instead of this rolling kind of five-year process. That created quite a bit of controversy. The legislature at that point put a hold on municipal water rights, knowing they're a little more complex under the law, and went through a two-year rulemaking for other water right holders, and new rules were adopted. The legislature then also directed the department to establish what was called the, I can't remember the name of the work group now, but basically Municipal Water Supply Work Group, which included members from the agriculture community, the environmental community, the groundwater community, and of course municipalities. That group met for over 4 years and came up with the process that's in place today, which is very, very different. You heard some reference to it in the previous testimony. Real briefly, the way that the process works today really takes the concept of prior appropriation for municipalities, flips it around, and puts municipalities into more of a planning sort of mode in terms of developing water rights. A municipality can go to the department and ask for an extension of time. They will ask for an extension of time for the complete amount of time they need to develop that water right. If the department the department has the ability to negotiate with that entity and will approve at some point some amount of time to extend that water right. This does not allow the municipality to develop any more water than they are currently developing today. All that extension allows that utility to do is file what's called a Division 86, or Water Management and Conservation Plan. And it is through this planning process that municipalities actually develop water. There are three main components to these plans, and that's why I provided you this manual to kind of show you how the different elements and what's involved in terms of creating one of these plans. The first element is the management side of a water utility system. Unlike in the past, municipalities now, when they apply for extension, have to show how all of their water rights will be linked together, what their uses are for, how they're going to deal with redundancy in their system, and how they're going to develop those water rights over long periods of time. The other portion of the plan is the conservation element. You've heard a little bit about that today. There are requirements in the plan for metering, for leak detection, for rate setting, for all sorts of conservation measures, and I'll let the later panel discuss those. And then the last piece is basically how municipalities develop water. It's commonly referred to in the water jargon, municipal water jargon, as red light, green light water. And what that means is that although a municipality may have an extension of time to develop that water, they cannot develop that water until they have an approved plan. And within this plan, they must provide information about how much water they need to develop over the next 20 years.
Just, can I ask you a question about that? Yep. Do you think that that plan is as rigorous in terms of protecting the public interest as if they had to prove up their water again, as if they had to get a new permit?
Mr. Chair, certainly it's not the same process as obtaining a new water right, but I'm going to let some of the other panelists talk to you about what it takes to develop one of these plans.
Thank you.
And that may be more helpful. I'll be happy to come back and respond if okay. That's not sufficient.
Thank you.
Basically, the way the process works is a municipality must describe how much water they're going to need to use over the next 20-year period. And again, that's a negotiable item within the plan. The plans are a public document. There is opportunity for the public to comment at different processes through the development of the plan. At that point in time, if the department approves the plan, then the water utility only has the ability to develop the amount of water that's approved in that 20-year planning horizon. At that point, the department also has the ability to say or to require, in fact, they don't have the ability. Under the plan, the utility must return to the department every 10 years or less, depending on the department's requirements, and prove that they are meeting the benchmarks within the plan, or there may be plan elements that for some reason just didn't work, and you need to go back and revise those elements or try something new in terms of conservation. But the enforcement piece of this whole equation is that municipalities don't have, or the department has the opportunity to deny any municipality the ability to develop water, even under an approved extension, if they're not meeting the terms, in their view, of the Water Management Conservation Plan. So that's how that process works. We heard a little bit about the court case. That's why we're here today. We're not here today because of Coos Bay, but we're here today because of the impact that case has on all these existing water rights. Regardless of the extension part of the statute or the other municipal preference part of the statute, the court took a very narrow ruling that said you must judge all of these extensions based on one section of the statute, which requires completion of construction of a water permit within 5 years, and that may retroactively be applied to permit extensions that have been issued in the past. That's why we are here today, and I'll let Rick tell you what our bill does. Lastly, I just want to clarify something. You may hear opponents of this bill say that this bill expands state policy greatly, that it provides municipalities with an opportunity that they've never had before and ensures their municipal water rights into perpetuity. I believe what folks are referring to is Section 5 of this bill, and I just want to be very, very clear. What this bill does is does not affect water permits of any kind going forward, well, existing water permits. What that section says is if a municipality had obtained an extension in the past, that extension is valid. However, when they need an extension in the future, which all of these municipal permits do, they're all in line right now at the department to achieve their new extension, they have to still go through the extension process and the Division 86 Water Management Conservation Plan process. So it does not ensure any future or exemption from any future process in terms of getting an extension of time. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity, and I'll turn it over to Rick at this point.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Glick.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name for the record is Rick Glick with the Davis Wright Tremaine Law Firm. I am a water lawyer representing municipalities mostly today for the City of Bend. And as Willie says, the purpose of HB 3038 is not to overhaul the state's water laws, but in fact is an update of the existing statutes to make sure that growing communities get the water they need through a sound planning process. It is a codification of long-standing practice that the Water Resources Department had over decades, upon which municipalities have relied in developing their communities' water supply systems, and it is a recognition of the special needs that municipalities have. In a nutshell, what the bill will do is will extend the time for commencement and completion of construction to 20 years from the 5 that's in the statute now, and it would change the criteria by which extensions of time to complete construction would be granted. There was a presumption under existing law that says that good cause is shown if there's any construction activity going on. That is removed, and now construction or good cause is tied to and water development is tied to a water management and conservation plan, as Willie just mentioned. Senator Beyer asks a very appropriate question. Why would we treat municipalities differently than we would other water users in the state? And it's not to grant some kind of special favor, but to recognize the special problem that municipalities have. The most prominent of which is that under Oregon law, municipalities must have a comprehensive plan to deal with 20 years of development. It's not optional. Growth is not an option. That is not a requirement that applies to irrigation districts. So they have to find a way to develop a water supply. Water supply planning is constantly updated, and it takes a very long time indeed to develop a municipal water supply. The Coos Bay North Bend example is one where it took a great deal of time to get to the point where they're at right now, but others take a good deal of time too. Because these are significant projects, often they are subjected to extensive environmental impact analysis through federal licensing processes as well. The other major difference with municipalities and other water users is that there is a tension created under Oregon water law and the duty that cities find that they have to implement. And the tension first is with the doctrine of prior appropriation. As Willie mentioned, the law here, as in all the western states, is first in time is first in right. Whomsoever gets their application in first gets priority over all later comers. It's a very fundamental precept in western water law. On the other hand, cities are not able to get the bond financing or otherwise move forward with the development of its process until it knows for sure it's going to have the ratepayers there to pay back the bonds. So you have this dilemma. In trying to plan responsibly for future growth, cities must file their water right application early in order to make that priority, put that priority in place. But they cannot build the waterworks often immediately because the ratepayers aren't there yet. They're anticipated to be there in that 20-year planning horizon, but they're not there yet. So what that has meant over the past 30, 40, 50 years is that sound public water supply development meant that you applied early for your water right and then relied on the fact that there would be the opportunity to get extensions of time on a regular basis upon a minimal showing of good cause. That was how it was done over a long period of time, and in fact municipal utilities relied upon that in trying to make sure that they had the water they need now but also the water they would need much later on as their communities grow. This ability to do this kind of long-range planning is called into question by the Court of Appeals case in the Coos Bay North Bend Water Board case. And without getting into the merits of that at all, the case is now pending before the Supreme Court, it raises serious implications for undeveloped water rights that are held by municipalities across the state. You'll hear later about how many there might be. And the question is, are those water rights invalid because of the court's decision in the Coos Bay North Bend case? In other words, if construction had not occurred within 5 years, or it was clear it wasn't going to occur within 5 years, are those old water rights going to be invalidated? Which means you'd send an awful lot of communities in this state scrambling for new resources. As I believe Senator Westland had commented, there often are no good alternatives to these old water rights for municipalities to pick up because most surface water in the state, maybe all surface water in the state, is over-appropriated. New water rights are very, very tough to get. This problem is more acute in the Deschutes Basin following a second Court of Appeals decision rendered just yesterday, in which the court invalidated in their entirety the Water Resources Commission's Deschutes Basin mitigation rules. This was the mechanism by which municipalities would be able to make new groundwater use and put more water back in the stream for in-stream uses by way of mitigation. That system is now gone, according to the Court of Appeals. So there aren't any good alternatives for municipalities in the Deschutes Basin. The city of Bend has a project that is one of these old undeveloped water rights. that it has just secured an extension from the Water Resources Department. If the Coos Bay North Bend case is correctly decided, or if challenges to the City of Bend's extension are successful, the City of Bend is going to have a severe water shortage crisis in the next few years. So all of this is to say that what municipal water providers need in this state is clarification on the status of their existing undeveloped water rights and a path for securing long-term supplies going forward. And the bill is intended to get at that problem by doing the following things. The first thing, and what I'm going to be speaking to are the amendments to the bill that I'm not sure you have in front of you right now, but this is the language that we're hoping to see implemented. And what it says is that the holders of permits for municipal uses shall commence and complete construction within 20 years, up from the 5 years in the existing statute. This would apply to permits applied for after the effective date of this act. The bill provides that extensions of time to complete construction would be based upon a showing of good cause. We've eliminated the presumption of good cause if there's construction going on, and as with other extensions in the existing law, extensions for municipal use would be subject to the considerations described in ORS 539-010 sub 5, which is a cataloging of things for the Water Resources to Commission to consider.
Sure. That's clear, my question. Are you proposing new amendments to the Ann Gross bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I apologize. I should have mentioned that in the introduction of our testimony. We do have some technical amendments. They are not ready for today's hearing. Unfortunately, they've been submitted to the Legislative Council. So we don't have them. We would consider them technical in nature, and that's what Rick is talking about. Specifically, the reference to 539-010 would be in addition and is not in the current bill.
Okay.
Go ahead. Under the bill, extensions of time for completion of construction would be conditioned, or the use of more water be conditioned on approval by the Water Resources Department of a water management and conservation plan. As was mentioned before, this is provided for by rule in the Water Resources Department, but this bill would create it as a matter of statute. And that statutory requirement would include benchmarks as part of the planning process. I want to be clear, and you're going to hear a lot about this later today, that this is a new day for municipal water management and conservation planning. These plans, in fact, are quite substantive, have teeth in them, and have yielded real results. You're going to hear about that from plans that have been adopted and implemented. These two conditions on extensions, good cause and the an approved water plan, would apply to extension requests currently pending before the Water Resources Department or applied for after the effective date of the Act. In recognition of the reliance that municipalities have placed on the existing regime over the last 50 years, the bill would protect previously granted permits and extensions from legal challenge. And because the Water Resources Department is processing a great many of these extension requests right now, we've included an emergency clause in the bill. So what we are trying to do then is to preserve needed irreplaceable water rights upon which Oregon communities have been dependent and have relied upon a system that would allow them to develop them when the time came. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions you might have.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions.
Yes, sir.
Let's say the rights, the permits that the municipalities received, say, 50 years ago, but haven't acted on. Take a right like that. Let's say they lose their priority, they drop to the bottom. Who's going to be moving up in front? Is it going to be industrial users, ag users, in-stream water rights? I mean, who would benefit by the city's if they lost their priority level?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the answer to that is all of the above. But in many cases, what has happened is that in-stream water rights have been filed to appropriate whatever might be left on a stream. So the probability of a successful new municipal water right application if the old one is lost is very, very small.
Right. Okay. And another question. I've heard discussion that that the municipalities want 20 years to develop that right, and that in some ways it's tied to what the bonding period might be, because the water is developed in terms of a project that requires municipal bonding. It's over a period of time. Is there a logical connection between that? And does it have, you know, there can be bonding for schools, you know, maybe a 10-year period, the life of the school may be 50 years.
Mr. Chair, the answer to your question is that the financing piece is quite critical to the ultimate build-out of the project. And under the existing Internal Revenue Code, a municipality cannot float bonds to develop a project unless it can spend, it's planning on spending 80% of the money it raises within the next 3 years or so. What this means is that the, as a practical matter, what happens in municipal water development is that the water right permit is secured in order to lock in the priority. And then the lead development activities, including the federal and other state permitting, occurs. And when you get much further down the road, then the financing happens, because that's when the expense incurs, and that's when the cities are ready to incur the debt and be satisfied they can make debt service. The 20-year period that we're talking about is reflective both of Oregon planning law, which requires cities to plan on a 20-year horizon, but also the reality that it takes a long time to develop these things.
That's fine, but just to follow up on that, you don't see a real connection between the details of the bonding and the 20-year period. I mean, a 10-year period, for example, would probably suit you just as well in terms of the bonding requirement.
Mr. Chairman, as far as I am aware, there is no link between the laws regarding revenue bonding and a 20-year horizon.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Questions from the committee?
Okay.
Senator Shields?
Given two court cases and the fact that I assume you're listening carefully to what happened in those court cases, do you consider what you proposed, both in the bill and in its amendments, to be real steps at trying to compromise with the Water Watch folks?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, what we are trying to do with this legislation is to put into statute a sensible and responsible planning process. We believe that municipalities have come a long way through this community water supply planning process that Willie had described in stepping up and committing to serious, substantive conservation planning and implementation efforts, management efforts. Yes, I think we have made steps in the direction that Water Watch is interested in municipalities going to. Have we come the full way? Probably not, as you will hear from them. But I think the principal interest that Water Watch would like to see implemented here is that on extensions there be a full-blown reopening of the public interest analysis, and that we do have trouble with. That would be, in fact, an upending of a long tradition of Western water law, not just here but everywhere else in the West. And the idea is that when a water right permit is applied for and granted, there is a public interest test that is by its nature a snapshot of existing conditions. Everyone recognizes that conditions change over time, but that's locked in. It is not contemplated that every few years you might look at existing conditions and maybe make changes in the water rights. And to do that, would subject municipalities to further rounds of expensive and extensive public hearings, development of new conditions that would add expense, sometimes rendering the project uneconomic. That's a possibility. So in this instance, we feel that because communities have relied in good faith on the way the system worked for all these many decades, that it would be unfair in the extreme to subject these communities now to another round of public interest analysis that have already been through and subject them to the expense of having to deal with that going forward. I hope that's responsive to your question, sir.
Mr. Chair, if I could, and Senator Shields, is also a very, very good question. I should mention that we have been working with Water Watch on the initial drafts of the bill. Before we even drafted the bill, we had a meeting with them in the department, and we continue to meet with them through the House process. The bill you have before you today is significantly different than the bill that was introduced for the session. And I do want to compliment, you'll hear from, I believe, Mr. Posowitz and Ms. Russell, and they have negotiated with us in very, very good faith. We just haven't been able to come eye to eye. We've come a long ways. But we're always willing to negotiate, and I don't want the committee to have the understanding that we haven't been willing to work with any group, or that the workings in that group is just purely adversarial. I think both sides have come to that process in very good faith.
And Willie, just a comment from me. I absolutely accept what you just said. I know that the cities have tried very hard to work on reaching accommodation, and so have the folks from Water Watch, and you haven't quite got there, but I know that you've tried hard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Heigart.
Good morning, Chair Ringo and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Todd Heigerkin, and I'm here really in two roles today. One, to encourage your support for House Bill 3038A as the chair of the Special Districts Association of Oregon's Legislative Committee. And secondly, to talk a little bit about municipal water development and my position as manager of community and intergovernmental relations for the Tualatin Valley Water District. For those of you who may not be familiar with TVWD, we are a municipal water supplier in Washington County. We serve more than 190,000 people in our 45-square-mile area. TVWD has actually two sources of water that we use to meet our current needs of our customers, and one additional source that we have a significant investment in and are evaluating as a possible source in the future. So my role here today is to talk a little bit about municipal water development. And what I'm hoping to do is to reference some real-world experiences that the Tualatin Valley Water District has experienced in regard to multiple sources of water and how that's managed, some factors to consider when developing a new source of water in coordination with public and other governmental entities. So those are some of the areas I'm going to touch on. First, I believe it's important to note that one of our primary functions as municipal water providers is the need to plan for future water supply. As Mr. Tiffany and Mr. Glick had mentioned, this planning is critical because we have what's known as a duty to serve. We have legislation that requires us to serve our customers in our service area. Simply put, this means that we have to provide water to those requesting it. We cannot tell people and businesses that there is no water available for them. Land use laws are set up that water availability cannot be a limiting factor to growth. This is apparent when one looks at the moratorium statutes. In addition, as governmental entities, municipal water suppliers are directly responsible to their constituents, and so we must be prudent managers of our financial and environmental resources while making sure that the needs of our customers, the public, are met. It's a requirement. Beyond this duty to serve, which I've mentioned, water supply planning is critical to address other aspects that we must tackle, such as the land use or other planning statutes, environmental statutes that we have to comply with, and then some of the bonding or financing requirements that we've touched on a little bit here today. Water providers are involved in a variety of planning. This is reflected in our process to develop a forward-looking water system master plan that's approved by the Department of Human Services Drinking Water Program. The Water Service System Master Plan looks at local water system needs for the next 20 or more years. This deals with some of the construction aspects and our demands and how we're going to meet that. From this master plan, we generate a variety of additional plans, such as the capital improvements plan. How are we going to address the construction needs for the future growth? And our financial plan, how are we going to pay for this growth in the future? In addition, there is a water management and conservation plan, which has been mentioned and you're going to hear more about in the next panel, which is a document that's actually approved by the Water Resource Department. So two different state agencies are approving two different plans in this process. These plans, again, are forward-looking documents that are used to identify how, as a municipal water provider, we will meet future demands. However, these plans can only be successful if the water provider has ongoing access to the a reliable source of water that these plans are based on, i.e., the water right. Now, municipal water providers must also plan for the great variability of weather patterns that change each year. Exceptionally hot, dry summers result in heavy demands on the water system as customers increase both their indoor and outdoor water activities. This is something that we have to plan for. Municipalities do not use water that is not needed. However, we do need to plan to provide water during those seasons or periods of high demand. And so a lot of the numbers we talk about it deal with peak season, peak day, peak even to peak hour flows that are needed. This coordination or planning ensures that there's greater reliability for our customers and our businesses. Again, that's what we're in the business of doing, is providing water to our customers and businesses. So let's talk a little bit about developing a water source. It's important to evaluate each water source for the feasibility of a water supply project. You don't just jump into this and spend a lot of money and put up a water treatment plant. There's a lot of study that goes in and consideration that goes into this. Earlier, I mentioned that TVWD is currently evaluating the feasibility of developing an additional water source. I think this is a good example to show some of the steps that were taking place before any physical construction began. And some of the steps that we had to go through as follows. First, we had to evaluate the quality of the raw or untreated water. Our initial testing was initiated 7 years prior to any construction on the water treatment plant. Then we had to evaluate the best treatment process options. We operated a pilot water treatment plant and conducted evaluations that were conducted 6 years prior to the construction of an actual water treatment plant. Our next step was land acquisition, which at times can be a challenge.
I just want to let you know we've got a lot of people signed up. To the extent you have written testimony, I mean, we will go through that carefully.
I can provide something.
Okay, go ahead. I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want you to make sure that we move right along, because we've got to get to the next group quickly.
I'll be happy to, Mr. Chair. Another component is a preliminary engineering report, which is to determine how the water source could be developed under various engineering and financial and governmental scenarios. This was completed 2 years prior to construction. And then in addition to that, there's the engineering permits and plan review that represent additional action that needs to take place, again, before any construction happens with respect to that. Earlier, the financing was mentioned, so I'm going to kind of skip over that since that was kind of touched on. The important thing to note is obviously all these type of activities that I'm talking about and the construction of an entity obviously requires an infusion of money that's necessary in order to accomplish that. Another item I just want to touch on briefly is that I don't know if many folks realize, but it's the public involvement aspect of developing a water source. Members of the public have expressed a greater interest in providing input on how a municipal water provider proceeds with the development of a water source. This public involvement is an important factor and can impact the timing associated with the development of a water right. So that's something we have to factor into our...
If you could just wrap it up in another minute, please.
I just want to touch on the fact that we also try to cooperate with other municipal water providers because we try to come together to work together on common projects as opposed to everybody just doing their own thing. To give you an example, on one source, we work with 4 of the water providers. On another, there's 18. And on our third source that we're looking at under evaluation, there's 6 water providers that are interested in that. And then, of course, there's a whole treatment and transmission aspect of that, which the important thing to note there is different components are sized for different amounts. your transmission system, which is kind of the backbone of your system, that may be sized for a 50 to 100 year life period. You have a dam that's going to be sized hopefully for a 100 year life period as far as the reliability. And then your drinking water plant, that's an expensive process that you try to phase in over time. So even though we might have a water right for a certain amount, a lot of times we may try to phase some of those components in to be better stewards of our financial resources. So with that, I think it's important to note that these are things that are conducted, are critical for a water right to be in place, and I've tried to provide you with a flavor of some of the activities that need to be conducted in order for us to continue our municipal water right. Happy to answer any questions and be happy to provide some more details.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to take more of your time. I know we've got a lot of people to talk, but I think all three of these witnesses have referred to public input somewhere in their testimony. And I guess something that's nagged at me for the last several days is that public review of some sort probably occurred when the water right was established, whether it was in 1920 or 1950. That public interest review, as it's been called, I think in 2005 is probably different than it would have been in 1920 or 1950, and I'm wondering how you reconcile such an old water right, you know, with all the changes that have occurred between then and now. And I recognize that's a huge question, Mr. Chair. I don't know if we even want to try to answer it, but that's the thing that bothers me most.
Answer it in 30 seconds, please.
We'll let the lawyer try that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I think the answer is that, yes, the concept of what is in the public interest does change over time. But the nature of prior appropriation is that once the water right is secured and you pass the public interest test at that time, you're not subjected to revisiting that public interest test into the future. You're locking in the resource. What we're proposing instead of a public interest review on extensions is that you make sure that the cities are ready, willing, and able to make the most efficient use of the water and are doing what they can to conserve the resource. To require that they go through an initial public interest review and have new mitigation requirements, for example, imposed upon them is to subject them to significant risk of additional expense to the point where they can't build the project anymore. That's a real possibility.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
10 seconds or less? you have it. Committee staff has just received the -6 amendments. These are the amendments that we refer to, so I just want to make sure you have
it. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You know what I'd like to do now is I'd like to hear from the department, Adam Sussman. Then I want to hear from the Water Watch folks. And then I want to hear the panel two from the cities. And then we'll get to the other folks that are on our sign-up sheet.
Good morning, and for the record, I'm Adam Sussman with the Water Resource Department. I'll try to be brief because I know you have a lot of people signed up. I do have some written testimony that's being provided, and I guess I just want to make sure off the bat that I say that the department does support House Bill 3038 with the -6 amendments that I think were passed out by committee staff. So I'm just going to step back and talk about this at maybe the 30,000-foot level. And I want to make sure that the committee understands that about 95% of this bill is in Section 5. The other 5% or so is in the beginning of the bill where we talk about new permits being issued and having a 20-year development timeline. So why is Section 5 of the bill so important? It's important because, as you heard from Mr. Glick, the department has interpreted the permit development statutes for municipalities to not require construction with any specified time period. And now, as you also heard from Mr. Glick, because of a court case that recently came down, there's a lot of concern about the validity of these permits, and we're talking about hundreds of permits. And I would agree with Mr. Glick that these permits were held by these municipalities in good faith based on the department continually allowing extension after extension on a five-year basis based on our understanding and interpretation of the law. And not only were they held in good faith, but they were encouraged to ensure that they had adequate water supply for future growth, for redundancy, for regional problem solving, and emergencies. And when you hear about, you know, oh my gosh, there's all these municipalities out there with undeveloped permits, each one of those municipalities has a story to tell. They may have an undeveloped permit because it's just waiting for an emergency. If a tanker truck happens to spill into their primary water source, they have another source to turn on, but yet maybe they've never needed it before. So I think you need to be very careful when you hear about that there's lots of undeveloped municipal permits out there, that each one has its own story to tell. And some people would call this bad water management, and other people would call it sound planning. So, I mean, I guess it's sort of up to you. So what is the issue really about in this bill that you're going to hear? And that is that it's an opportunity to rehash a debate that the department and stakeholders spent 4 years evaluating, and in fact included the Water Resources Commission, which is what constitutes good cause for extending a municipal permit. This bill doesn't change that. So let me step back. For 4 years, starting in 1998 all the way through 2002, we worked with a number of people in this room to develop, negotiate, and deliberate this question of what constitutes good cause when we're thinking about extending a municipal permit. And the issues that you're going to hear raised by Water Watch today, and the issues that were raised by then about good stewardship of the resource and the status of the water resources, are extremely important to the department and its mission. And I just wanted to make sure that the committee understood, based on the testimony from Mr. Kirkpatrick, that the department, in making a decision on the Kernville Glen Eden Beach extension, worked side by side with the Department of Fish and Wildlife to ensure that our decision was protective of the fishery resource. So
I'll ask a question about that. Is the Department of Fish and Wildlife satisfied with the status of the Glen Eden Beach situation?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my understanding is that when we issued a superseding proposed final order on that permit extension, we did that in cooperation and with the blessing of the Department of Fish and Wildlife to ensure that the state was protecting the fishery resource. So that's my understanding, and maybe someone has a different understanding. I want to use that as an example that those issues are important to the department.
I'm having a problem, and I wasn't going to interrupt, but since Chair asked you a question. Just real quick, you know, earlier in your testimony you said because of a court case this and this and this and this and this has happened. Question: don't you think the Supreme Court knew that this and this and this and this was going to happen, that they wanted some of this dialogue to occur and so on, or do you think they were just stupid or what? I'm having a problem here when we dismiss all of this discussion because the Supreme Court did something to you. Don't you think they understood what they were doing?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Shields, this discussion took place for 4 years, even before.
Do you think they were unaware of that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I think what the court did is they took a very narrow constructionist view of the statute, and said that the way the department is interpreting it is incorrect based on a narrow constructionist view. I think what I would want to express is that we spent 4 years as a department, including a subcommittee of the commission, and deliberated over this question of how do we handle permit extensions for municipalities, which we came up with the program that we have to develop a permit extension and a water management and conservation plan, which we think is a sound program. And this bill doesn't change that at all. In fact, I think what I'm trying to say is the bill really only does two things. Number one, under Section 5, it makes it clear that the decisions that the department made in terms of the construction requirement that's based on the court case won't affect the validity of the permits that exist. And the second thing that it does is it sets a new timeline prospectively for municipal use permits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So just to piggyback on some of the things that you've heard from the municipalities, we did develop a program that requires the development of this water management and conservation plan program where they provide a reasonable showing of need for the permit and good cause, and that extension process requires, like you've heard, lots of demand projections and other things. I think it's important for the committee to understand that from the department's perspective, this plan is a very rigorous document, and it is a new world in terms of how we handle the municipal permit extensions. It also provides, I think you were asking a question, Senator Shields, about public process and ample opportunity to participate. The Water Management and Conservation Development Plan process under the Commission's rules does allow public process, input, and in fact appeal to the Water Resources Commission if somebody believes that entity is not satisfying the requirements of the rules in the development of the Water Management and Conservation Plan. And so I just wanted the committee to understand that this question about how we handle permit extensions going into the future based on good cause for municipalities is something that the department and the Water Resources Commission and a number of stakeholders spent four years developing. And while everybody wasn't satisfied with that process, we think we've developed a good program that's been in place for about a year and a half to 2 years now, and we don't think it's time to deem it a failure. We think it's a good program, and we think it should continue, and we should have an opportunity to demonstrate that, in fact, it is a successful program, and it's a way of handling municipal permits. I also wanted to mention that those Dash 6 amendments were largely suggestions by the department that we had concerns about how 3038A was drafted, and we were hoping to make those changes. And those changes do three things that we think are really important. It clarifies that the new permits need not only to commence construction but need to be completed within 20 years. It also puts back in the statute the provision that all good cause determinations for all permit extensions need to consider the factors in ORS 539-010-5, which is sort of a laundry list and sideboards, if you will, of issues that should be considered when granting a permit extension. And it also clarifies the applicability provisions, again, in Section 5, which we believe is about 95% of the bill.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Next, we're going to bring up, I can't read the chair's writing, I think Karen and Brian from Water Watch, sir, panel from Water Watch. Do you have a panel?
Pardon me?
Is there a panel from Water Watch?
I'm Brian Posowitz. This is Karen Russell. We're both from Water Watch.
Okay.
There are other witnesses here to testify against the bill, and I don't know.
Go ahead. You can go ahead and proceed.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee, my name is Brian Posowitz. I am the president of the Board of Directors of Water Watch of Oregon. I am also an attorney in private practice, and in that capacity I represented Water Watch in the Coos Bay case that you've heard something about today. Water Watch is a nonprofit organization founded in 1985. It has about 1,200 members. The mission of Water Watch is to protect and restore the natural flows in Oregon's rivers, to keep water in Oregon's rivers, to support fish, wildlife, and recreation. House Bill 3038, what it deals with in the big picture is how much time a municipal water supplier ought to have between getting a permit to appropriate water and actually putting that water to use. That may seem like a rather technical point, but it in fact is a very important point. It's a very important point that will have a big impact in the future on how the water demands of future growth in Oregon get balanced against the interests of preserving water in stream and against the interests of other water users. What is important to keep in mind in that regard, and what is important to keep in mind in regard to House Bill 3038, is that Oregon's water law attempts to balance competing interests. It attempts to balance the interests in taking water out of a stream against the interests in keeping water in a stream and other interests. Oregon water law attempts to balance those interests by conducting a public interest analysis at the time that the permit is issued. The point that we've been trying to make on House Bill 3038 is that if you allow too much time to pass between issuance of a permit and actual use of the water, the actual use occurs based on a public interest analysis that has become outdated. Now, what determines the time between a public interest analysis and the actual use of the water? There are three things, and those three things are really the focus of House Bill 3038 and our objections to it. First of all, the time between public interest analysis and actual use is determined by the time that is put in the initial permit, the time given to the permit holder to develop the water use under that permit. Second of all, the time between the public interest analysis and the actual use is determined by whether that initial time period to develop that's put in the permit, whether that can be extended, and if so, whether that can be extended, and if so, for how long. The third issue is, if the time can be extended, what do you consider when you make the decision about whether to extend it or not? The current law says if you get a permit to appropriate water, you have to put it to use within 5 years. Current law says you can extend that period. We think that is intended to say if you get your permit, you're planning to put the water to use in 5 years, and for some reason you can't do it, you can come in and get an extension. And that extension is granted for good cause. And what there's a statutory reference. What good cause means is really pretty ambiguous. There's a reference to a statute that talks about markets and demand for water. But good cause in the statute does not say you get to consider the impacts on the resource, the impacts on the in-stream resource when you decide whether to grant an extension. I want to talk just briefly about what's happened under the current law, because what House Bill 3038 really tries to do is continue the practices under 3038, or I'm sorry, under current law that the courts have said are invalid. And so I think it's important to know just kind of what's happened under the current law. Under the current law, municipal water suppliers have been issued a permit that says you got to put the water to use in 5 years. Even though everybody knows they're not going to do that, even though everybody knows that condition in the statute is not going to be met, they've been given these permits. And then every 5 years, they've come in and applied for an extension, and the Water Resources Department has always given them an extension, and recently started giving them extensions not for 5 years, but for as long as 50 years, even though the statute says you're supposed to get 5 years to develop at the outset. The result of that has been an extraordinary number of very old municipal water permits that have never been put to use. And my written testimony, which I forgot to give to the committee assistant, it includes an exhibit, and let me tell you what that is. We asked the Water Resources Department for a list of all municipal permits for which no water rights certificate had been obtained. Ordinarily, the process is if you get a permit, You're supposed to put the water to use within 5 years. Then you get a certificate that says, you've put the water to use. You now have your water right. And we got a list of all the municipal permits for which that certificate has not been obtained. And Mr. Sussman will tell you this isn't a perfect indication of all the municipal water rights that have never been put to use. Some of these may have been put to use, and they just haven't got a certificate for whatever reason. But it at least gives you a rough idea of how many uncertificated municipal permits are out there. That exhibit takes not all those permits, but just the ones that are more than 20 years old, the ones with a priority date in 1985 or before. If you add up all the water under those permits, it's about 10 times the water that the Portland Water Bureau uses to supply its demand. And again, this is not a list of all the municipal permits that have ever been issued. Only the ones that don't have a certificate, and only the ones with a priority date before 85. So,
just to ask you a question, please. You said that some of these are using the water even though they don't have a certificate. Is that a small portion? Can you just explain why that is?
I don't know how many that entails or how many that is. What I know is that these are the permits for which there's not a certificate. Mr. Sussman from the Water Resources Department tells me in some cases nobody's gotten around to proving up the use and getting a certificate. In some cases there may be an application for a certificate that's in process. I don't know the extent of that. But, you know, I mean, but even if we talk, the amount of water covered by these permits is 10 times what Portland uses, and Portland says it supplies a quarter of the state's population. So, you know, what this shows, I think, is that it's been so easy to get these long-term municipal permits that it's been abused, and so the number of municipal permits out there is vastly in excess of, and these are permits that have not obtained a certificate, is vastly in excess of what we could need to supply all of the state's water demands today. And this is just an illustration, and we're just trying to show that there is a significant number of old municipal water permits that have not been put to use. And here is our problem with that. Our problem with that is that they got a public interest analysis. Maybe they didn't because it was issued so long ago. And then they've sat on it, and they've got extensions and extensions and extensions, and now all of a sudden they pop up and say, we want to put this permit to use. But there's no chance for the public to say, this will have an unreasonable detrimental impact on this watershed. There's no chance for us to consider the public interest factors that you would have to consider today if you got a new permit. And let me just give you a couple of examples of that, a couple of things that we're fighting right now. On the southern Oregon coast, municipal water suppliers want to take water from the Chetco River under permits that were issued in the 60s. And if they do that, the evidence shows they're going to wipe out a run of native Chinook salmon. The point is, they're applying for another extension of that permit issued in the 60s now, and the statutes don't give a clear opportunity for the public to say, let's look at the public interest. Let's look at the factors that you would have to consider if you got a new permit today. The city of Bend is now trying to is seeking extension of a groundwater permit, a permit that was issued in the 60s, and they want to use that to meet their future growth. Our problem with that is if they develop this permit issued in the 60s, it's not subjected to the kind of public interest analysis that a new permit would be subjected to. And so they would be able to evade the rules that have recently been struck down, but the rules that were designed to say if you take out groundwater in the Deschutes Basin, you got to mitigate the impacts on the Deschutes River. They would totally avoid those rules because they do it under an old permit that they've been allowed to keep forever, even though the statutes say you're supposed to develop your permits within 5 years. Another example of just the abuse is the city of Adair Village, which since in 1971 got a water appropriation permit for 50 million gallons per day. In perspective, Portland uses about 100 million gallons per day on average. They don't need anything close to that 50 million gallons a day, but they want to hang on to this old permit, and the system's allowed them to do that. They want to hang on to it because they want to sell the water to everybody else and make a profit off a public resource. And let me talk about Coos Bay.
What is the city of Adair Village? Is it a city?
Well, you know, I don't know everything there is to know about that. My understanding is it was at one time a military. Do you know anything about that?
There was some radar installation.
Yeah.
So you said the city of Adair Village wants to make a profit. Where is that money going to be going, though? I mean, is it going in somebody's pockets? Is it going into some other government entity?
I
don't know. Going to get rich off this?
I don't know where the money would go. But it's an example of the system allowing a municipal water supplier to hold permits vastly in excess of its own needs.
The city, I think, plans to use the money that it would get, and this is what we've heard, it's rumor, but to fund economic development within the city. It would be a revenue source. The sale of this public resource would be a revenue source for the city and its growth.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Coos Bay, I want to talk very briefly about that. Coos Bay applied for a permit to take water from a creek called Ten Mile Creek. It runs from Ten Mile Lake through the Oregon Dunes National Scenic Area into the Pacific Ocean. It used to be a great producer of coho salmon. It produces steelhead. They wanted 25 million gallons per day from Ten Mile Creek. The actual demand of the Coos Bay North Bend Water Board has never exceeded 7 million gallons per day. So they want three times what they've ever been asked to supply in the past. And they asked for that permit even though they had another expansion plan from another source that would meet their needs to 2025. What the record showed is that their plan was to get the permit, wait for the five-year period to run, and then get an extension for 50 years to develop water from Ten Mile Creek. Our problem with that is, you know, wait a minute, if you're not going to use this for 50 years, we shouldn't be asking whether it's in the public interest today. We should be asking that when you're closer to the time of actually using the water. Now let's talk about House Bill 3038 and what it would do. It would provide 20 years instead of 5 years to develop a permit once the permit's issued. And everybody here is talking about 20 years is the period between getting the permit and putting the permit to use. They need to plan. 20-year horizon is reasonable. But that wouldn't really be the period under House Bill 3038. 20 years would not really be the period because House Bill 3038 would continue to allow for extensions, and it would put no time limit on how long that extension can be for. So what we would end up with is a 20-year permit. At the end of 20 years, it gets extended by who knows how long. We're not talking about a 20-year development period here. We're talking about a development period that we don't know. And one of our proposals is there needs to be a limit on how long you get these extensions for. Also, you know, our other big issue is what gets considered when an extension gets granted. Our view is that after a certain amount of time, whatever public interest analysis you did is too old to base a new water use on. And if that period, let's assume that period is 20 years. If you don't develop it in 20 years and you want an extension, certainly the public ought to be able to consider at that point whether this water use that you didn't complete in 20 years and you want more time to complete, whether that's in the public interest or not. The public ought to be able to consider that. The standard good cause does not allow the kind of public interest determination that's necessary to protect the resource.
Mr. Posowitz, I want to follow up on something the cities have said. Their point was that they're supposed to do land use planning on with a 20-year view. And why does it make sense to let them plan for the water needs in the same period of time?
Well, let's say it is 20 years. And let's just say that's fine. They can plan for 20 years. House Bill 3038 would allow more than a 20-year water planning horizon.
Well, you're concerned about the extensions after
correct.
20 years.
Correct, yeah.
But aren't your amendments intended to say the initial time is only 10 years.
Yeah, and we would suggest 10 years because we think that's the period of time after which you can no longer count on a public interest analysis to be accurate and to be reliable. Now, the land use, as far as how that coincides with land use planning, consider the analogy that land use planning takes place in a 20-year horizon as far as comprehensive plans. there's all sorts of smaller decisions that get made within that comprehensive plan that don't have a 20-year time frame. You plan for 20 years with a comprehensive plan, but when you issue a building permit, that building permit is not meant to be something you might do in 20 years. It's meant to be something you're going to do now. And we think that the water appropriation permit is more analogous to a building permit than it is to a comprehensive plan. There are other mechanisms in the water laws that allow for long-term planning. And the cities have never wanted to use those because they still have to get a permit within 5 years of actual use of the water. And for example, there's a system of you can get a reservation of water for future economic development for a storage project, and you can do that in the statutes, or the rules, I believe, say 20 years ahead of your anticipated actual use. You can also withdraw particular waters and say this is going to be reserved for this kind of use or that kind of use. The cities will say, well, the reservation system is only for storage projects. But we think that's what they ought to be amending, not the permit process. They ought to be allowed to get a reservation for future economic growth with a priority date, because a reservation contains a priority date, and then still have to get the permit when they're ready to put the water to use, allowing a public interest analysis. They don't want to do that. Did I answer your question? I kind of went on.
You did.
Okay. So number one, 20 years isn't the real period because the extension period is unlimited in House Bill 3038. There isn't an opportunity to ask at the extension phase whether this water use is still in the public interest. Now, they say, oh, yeah, but the rules provide for that. The rules don't provide for that. They don't provide for consideration of resource protection issues. And there's something very interesting if you look at how the rules are structured. They say, on some of these extensions, we are going to consider the kinds of resource issues that people like Water Watch are concerned about, but only on the permits that were issued after 1998. You have to ask if they think that's appropriate to consider at the extension phase for a permit issued after 1998. Why isn't it appropriate to consider for a permit issued before 1998? And you've heard about conservation plans. All those do is say, we want to make sure the water you take out of the stream gets used efficiently. They don't look at what's the impact of that water coming out of the stream on fish and wildlife and recreation. They don't look at that. But they will look at that under the rules with respect to water withdrawals after 2042. Why is it appropriate after 2042 but not now? So there's a big gap here where they don't want to allow consideration of resource impacts on these permit extensions, even though they do on permits issued after a certain date and water withdrawn after a certain date. There's a big window there where that wouldn't happen.
Just a couple more minutes.
Yeah, and let me just close. I want to make a couple comments about municipal water use. And whenever we talk about municipal water use, there's a tendency to enshrine it and to think of it as drinking water, cooking water, cleaning water. Municipal use is all those things, and those are all very, very important. But municipal use is also golf courses, swimming pools, fountains, and washing cars. It's things like that. I'm not saying those things are bad, but you have to recognize that that is municipal use too. And when we talk about how we balance municipal use against in-stream resources, we have to recognize that the trade-off we're making is not just for drinking and cooking and cleaning. It's also for all of these things that may have a lower priority than protecting fish and wildlife and scenic recreation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Field?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. I have to run to another meeting in a couple minutes, but I care about both sides in this issue. I care about my cities. I care about their water supply. I care about organized future and so on. I care about what issues you're raising at the same time. Is there room for further compromise between everything that I've heard Willie talking about this morning and what I'm hearing you talking about? I'm interested in getting to a win for everybody.
Yes, and we have looked very hard for a compromise, and we have proposed amendments. I meant to mention this. They're in dash 5. They're floating around somewhere. We propose what we think are very reasonable amendments that we would at least not object to the bill going forward with. We don't think this is the right approach, 3038, but we're willing to say, okay, but can you make some amendments that we think are very reasonable? Number one, there ought to be a limit on how long you can get an extension for. Number two, there ought to be an opportunity to consider, before an extension is granted, what is the impact going to be on the in-stream resources. That's all we're asking for. We don't think that's extreme.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Karen, did you have anything to add?
I don't. I would like to say that Paul Caton, who is with the Salmon Drift Creek Watershed Council and should be signed up, came from the coast. So if you could work him in today, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, we will do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Frankly, I'm not sure when my next appointment is, but I'd like to move this along. So, Paul Caton, why don't we go with you, and then we'll go to the panel that signed up, the next panel, really, and take care of that.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Caton. I live in Otis. I am a scientist by profession, and I'm presently a volunteer and the president of the Salmon Drift Creek Watershed Council in Lincoln City. I'm here to speak in opposition to House Bill 3038. I'd like to speak from the perspective of somebody who literally gets his feet wet in the streams. We watershed volunteers really believe and work the Oregon Plan. We really take it to heart. We plant vegetation, we place wood in the streams, et cetera, et cetera. But there's little we can do to accomplish if there's no water left in the stream. I feel allowing municipalities to reserve water rights too far in the future could potentially undo everything that watershed councils are trying to accomplish when they may drain streams below critical levels. And I think this bill could just exacerbate that situation. Let me give you two examples for our local area around Lincoln City. In 1995, Lincoln City applied for three dams on three small coastal streams. They received the PFO from WRD and have been sitting on those with no plans for 10 years, and they don't expect to be doing anything on that for 10 years. Now, these two streams have significant coho runs, which NOAA is now just now developing restoration plans for, thinking about much differently than they did 10 years ago when these applications were originally submitted. If Lincoln City decides to develop any of these dams, our local watershed council can't even raise any public interest issues against the development because the period for comments have closed. Basically, they're grandfathered in under a completely different understanding of environmental issues related to coho, as Senator Shields had discussed earlier. My second example is that our watershed council has been very intimately involved with the protests on Drift Creek, which we've heard quite a bit about today already. This has been a very, very frustrating permitting process. And I'd like to take issue with one of the Mr. Sussman's comments. One of the permit applications on Drift Creek was originally denied by Water Resources based on ODFW's comments. What I think happened is that the applicant convinced WRD to take ODFW to the woodshed, and lo and behold, about 18 months later, a permit popped out with some conditions, but still approved it, which without really making any substantial change to the mitigated ODFW's original protest against that. But let me continue with Drift Creek. Again, Kernville.
Just for a couple minutes, I'm sorry.
Okay. Let me skip down. Basically, we've heard on Kernville on this Drift Creek issue that Lincoln City wants to buy these rights because they can get around the environmental requirements that are presently in place to protect the fish and stream. Environmental controls have evolved significantly over the last 40 years since those rights have been permitted. If Lincoln City wants to get new permits today, they really should go through the current permitting process and not subvert the permitting process.
Tell me again when Lincoln City obtained those permits.
Kernville. It's about in the 60s.
Okay, in the 60s. All right, thank you.
63, 67.
In summary, I'd just like to say these are only a couple of small coastal streams. Multiply these misuses by potentially thousands, as Brian just pointed out, because there are literally millions of cubic foot of water rights out there that are already unused. Please don't make it easier for municipalities to bank water rights that could possibly not withstand a comprehensive evaluation 10 years down the road, when we may have a completely different environmental understanding of the potential environmental impacts of that action. Thank you,
Mr. Caton. Okay, thank you very much. Let's have the next panel. Lorna Stickle, Paul Eckley, Tom, is it Hickman? Sorry that we're losing our committee for you.
That's okay.
Did you bring lunch?
No, I thought you were bringing it.
No. Good morning.
Morning, Sandy Ringo, and what used to be the committee. I've submitted some written materials, and hopefully those who have had to leave will be able to avail themselves of that. And actually, a lot of the things that I was going to talk about have already been covered. I'm not going to repeat them. I do think, though, that it's important to note that we have had a very long history in Oregon of municipalities having the ability to hold water rights because they do grow over time. And in fact, for the city of Portland, we've held water rights even prior to there even being a statutory requirement to have water rights pre-1909. And I think that, as Adam said, between 98 and 2002, we and most of the other stakeholders that you've been hearing from tried to thrash out how should municipalities deal with what they need to be doing for the future, both for new permits and for these old permits. And one thing I want to say is I've had an opportunity to look at this list of this long list that Brian handed out, as well as looking at the ones that are older than 50 years or older than 40 years. And I think that at some point in this process, if you really want to get down and take a look at what those permits are, I think you will find that the situation, while may be important on one or two particular streams, it's not an issue statewide overall as anywhere near to the degree that it's been presented. I'm going to give you one example.
You know, if I could just make a comment about that. I'm curious as to the on-the-ground-slash-in-the-water real-life impact of this issue, and that's why when I look at the list, it makes me wonder, all right, I don't have it right here, but okay, the city of Medford got one 50 years ago. What's really going on with that? Are they using the water? Is it set aside for some other purpose? Is there a legitimate use for that permit? And what would be the harm to the city of Medford if for some reason their permit was cut off in some fashion? And I noticed a long list, but for me to have a few data points like that would be helpful. And I guess I say that to the proponents of this bill, I say that to the opponents of this bill, and I say that to the department, because I feel like right now I've got a few examples over there, and I don't know whether those are representative.
I think that's perfectly relevant, and I've looked at a list that actually does take a look at how much of those have been exercised. Medford is definitely one, as is E-Web is another one that takes up a significant portion of that larger number that's been talked about, and some of those have been developed. The reason why, in fact, some of those rights are still in permit status is because we can only perfect 25%. We have to have 25% or more before we can perfect. And in the case of the city of Portland, which I want to use as an example.
So, for example, a city could have developed 20%.
25.
Well, you said more than 25 before they can get
perfect.
The certificate. Perfect. Okay,
yes.
I'm sorry.
That's correct.
Okay.
And in the case of like the city of Portland, we have approximately 300 MGD of groundwater rights that were issued between 1976 and 1983, and then we have one right from 1961 that we inherited from an older district. We've developed 145 approximately MGD of that, about half, and we've taken 25 to 30 years to do that. So we have 155 left. how can we possibly submit a 10-year extension for that? Point one. Point two, we have statutory surface water rights to Bull Run. We have two reservoirs on that system. The first one was built in 1929. The second one was built in 1962. We've been using those resources for the last 80 years. Again, if we were looking at extensions, how would we do that? Now, granted, we don't have to because we have a statutory right, as does, I mean, there are a few entities in the state, and it's in my written materials, that there are a few that do have statutory rights where we don't need to get extensions, at least at this time. I guess I just want to hit on a couple of points that have not been hit on, so I'm not boring you to death with things you've already heard. You're going to hear from these two gentlemen about Division 86 planning and how it is a new world. It is. There's no way that any of us can sit here and say that because water management conservation plans done in the past may not have met the mark, and certainly didn't meet the mark as far as Water Watch was concerned, many of these new plans are a different kettle of fish. We have mandatory programs we must meet, and then we have to evaluate and show why we cannot do many of the others that are also listed in the rules for that. We have to show definitively why we are forecasting the kinds of demands that we are, and we are encouraged to do public involvement, and I can tell you most of us do public involvement. So why do we care about these longer periods of time? Rick Glick touched on budgeting related to finance, and we can certainly make available to you if you want to the types of bond statements that we have to issue and the things we have to cover and the questions that we get. And we're talking national bond markets here, not Oregon. They don't understand even necessarily Western water law. They are looking at what's the security for the issue that you are obtaining that bonding for. And if it's for a water treatment plant expansion, an intake, a new reservoir, whatever it is, they need to have certainty that the revenue that you produce that pays for that is secure. And the water rights is a major part of how they make that determination about issuing those.
And you think the 20-year requirement is necessary for that, or I mean, Mr. Glick,
20 years is usually the standard payback period for municipal bonds.
That may be the payback period, but I'm just wondering if there really is a connection, though, with it doesn't need to be developed over.
It depends on what you mean by developed and completed. If you're talking about a storage project, you can build that and it can be sized and ready to go for 20 years. Portland, good case in point, our reservoirs have lasted for much longer than that. If you're talking about an intake or a water treatment plant, you do not have to build those. And if it's groundwater, you definitely don't do that. You generally build those as you go.
Yeah.
You're not going to be building those all at once.
Okay, thank you.
Public interest and unexercised permits. That's my last point, and then I'm going to turn it over to some more specifics here. We recognize there are no free rides anymore. Even under these old permits, we are not asking for free rides. What we are looking for is a degree of certainty that when we go through the very extensive processes that we all have to go through to obtain the permits necessary to actually make these unexercised rights be developed, including things like ESA and ESA consultations, habitat conservation plans, Clean Water Act TMDLs, and 404 permits being just the primary ones and hoops that we have to jump through to get a project approved today and in place, there is more than adequate opportunity for the environmental issues to be addressed, and in fact, our customers demand that we address them. And I want to point out that in my materials attached to it, you will find a color brochure from the City of Portland on our fish restoration program. We've been working on this for the last 3 or 4 years, have already spent millions, and are going to be spending much more, and we are going to be devoting a portion of our already developed water rights to ensuring that fish flows in the Bull Run and Lower Sandy River don't damage endangered fish. So, therefore, the groundwater rights become an equal part of that conjunctive use equation as to how we are going to be able to meet our future needs and be able to address the issues of fish. We have a very strong tradition of stewardship in Portland on how we supply water, and I would venture to say that most of the other larger utilities, medium to larger cities, and many of the smaller ones have an equal degree of stewardship for our resource. And so we understand that when we do these Division 86 plans, when we ask for our extensions, that's not how we get access to the water. That's how we defend that we need to keep these, to keep our priority date.
Just a couple, another minute, please.
But it's when we develop our Division 86 plans and show conjunctively how we're going to use water efficiently and how we will develop those permits over time in a responsible manner, that's the proof of the pudding.
Okay.
And give us the time under these new rules to make that happen.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Hickman, and I'm the Water Utility Manager for the City of Bend. My testimony this morning will focus on conservation planning and the adequacy of that planning. I would like to talk about the Division 86 rules and the Water Management and Conservation Plan, or we call it WMCP. We just recently went through this process and received approval on our WMCP, and this proved to be no small undertaking. There are four main elements to all WMCPs: description of the municipal water supply, water conservation, water curtailment, and water supply. On the surface, these elements appear to be relatively benign and appear to have no real teeth. In reality, these elements require extensive analysis of the city's water system, use of water, and analysis of changes to conservation to conserve water. Some examples of this was we were required to do a very thorough analysis of our existing water rights and how we use water within those rights. This really helped us understand our real water needs, and in the past this had been done in a less analytical manner. In addition, the WMCP requires that we look at our conservation efforts and determine what we're really gaining from those efforts. This also proved to be very helpful to us to spend limited resources in areas where we get the biggest bang for the buck. One of the other things we found in the analysis resulting from the WMCP was that we found we had a per capita reduction in water in residential water use of 10% since 2002. We believe, because of ongoing conservation programs, that this trend will continue. It's important when we talk about conservation to understand that a lot of the conservation for municipalities requires changes in long-established habits within homes and businesses. This is a long, slow educational process. We are aggressively working to educate our citizens through several programs, and in fact have full-time staff dedicated to this effort. An interesting point is the full-time staff that we have is a result of a requirement in the previous WMCP, and it is now a benchmark in the current plan. Some examples of the education programs we are providing is publications and videos, which have won numerous awards. We are actively promoting the use of smart irrigation controllers, which meet the demands of plants at the time that they need it, rather than just a set schedule of every 3 days or 4 days. And the other thing that we are actively involved in is a WaterWise program, which has numerous partnerships with local developers, the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, and OSU, along with many others. We would encourage that the public go look at our WMCP. We've made that available on our website, and we have provided an executive summary in our testimony. One of the things that we also provided in our testimony that we are really excited about is our recent xeriscaping guide.
And I was looking at it. Very cool.
Yes. We spent 2 years putting this together, working on a regional effort with the other Central Oregon municipal entities and OSU to develop this, and this just recently hit the streets, and we are receiving a lot of good comments about this. Another reality of...
Mr. Heckman, I am definitely going to read your testimony. If you could just hit a couple high points, because I'm going to need to be out of here in about 10 minutes, and we have some other people that still need to testify.
I'd just like to hit on the fact that our previous WMCP required us to be fully metered by May of 2004. We spent $4.5 million to achieve that target, and if we had not done so, we would not be eligible for any extensions of time, new water right permits, or any other modification to our existing rights. I think that's a really important thing to note in light of some of the testimony you've heard this morning. We also, I encourage you to look at the executive summary of our WMCP. We have numerous benchmarks that we are required to achieve before our next update.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Thanks for coming all the way from Bend.
Senator Ringo. Mr. Chair, my name is Paul Eckley, and I'm the operations manager for the City of Salem Public Works Department. And I'm here today to testify on behalf of the City of Salem in support of House Bill 3038. And you have my testimony. It's quite lengthy. I'd like to just hit some high points, if it's okay with you.
Sure.
And I apologize for not bringing lunch today. I guess the key message I'd like for you to hear today from the City of Salem is that successful water planning requires a long-term strategy, which this bill helps provide for communities like Salem. On the page one of the slides, it's a PowerPoint copy, actually. Successful water planning does require a long-term strategy, and it does include infrastructure, stewardship, taking care of your water system, replacing water lines. It always requires environmental stewardship, which this community is conscious of the environment, and it involves an extensive public involvement process. It involves a very serious water conservation program, and the City of Salem is very serious now about water conservation, even with the rain we're having right now. And I did bring today some examples of some of the information we're handing out. It's a 1 inch per week kit that we're giving customers, and a drip detection device, and the infamous toilet tank leak device for your use. It also involves financial planning, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit later on. We already heard that we do have a duty to serve, and it does line up with our land use planning, the 20-year target. If you turn to page 4 of my handout, one thing I wanted to show at the very bottom of this is kind of our accomplishments in water conservation. Over the last 10 years, we have reduced per capita water conservation by about 15% in Salem, and we're targeting another 10% over the next 5 to 10 years. On page 5 at the bottom shows our demand forecast, and really that's part of the meat for us. Is our primary source of water in Salem is the North San Yam River, and we are planning on continuing with that. Ultimately, and I can't say exactly when ultimately would be, we are planning to use water out of the Willamette River, and we do have a right from the 70s to do that, and we need to have assurances that we can maintain that right. That's the purpose of that slide on 5. I don't want to spend much time going on our water management conservation plan that's about completed and ready to be submitted to Adam's office. On page 7, there's some of the benefits we list for our 10% goal. There's about 10 benefits for the community. On page 8, we have about 40 different benchmarks for conservation, and that includes these little kits and handouts. That's about half of them we've already done in Salem, and the lower 20 are things we're planning to do in the future to continue conservation. Briefly, we have two large projects right now. We're completing construction of our water treatment plant at Guerin Island, and that's requiring a habitat conservation plan, working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And Lorna mentioned that there are other avenues for actually public involvement through these permits. If it's not directly through your water rights permit, obtaining permits for construction, there are other avenues that environmental issues are addressed for all municipalities, whether it's U.S. Fish and Wildlife or the Corps of Engineers for our pipeline project. We're planning to build a 75 MGD pipeline in the future. It's our next large project for the community, It's going to take us right now till the year 2011 to complete that. We will need a permit from the Corps of Engineers because we're crossing wetlands and other open water areas. And other agencies, the very bottom of page 12 shows kind of the puzzle of all the agencies we're dealing with to get that pipeline permitted, federal agencies and state agencies, to be successful. Lastly, the third leg of our comprehensive plan is a conventional water master plan. I really don't want to spend much time talking about that. I think, lastly, if you just go to page 14, the very last page, kind of the wrap-up, is we do have some examples of why water planning and construction does take a long time. Almost 100 years ago, when the city of Salem left the Willamette River because of its poor, poor water quality and went to the North San Juan River, for its water source, that took 15 years to develop that water source. The original water right was 1923, and that system came online in 1938. That's pre-ESA, pre-Clean Water Act, and pre-other federal laws. Our current transmission main project, for a good example, will end up taking us 20 years to develop from its inception back in 1992 in our previous water plan to our current completion date of 2011, which may even slip depending on our financing. Lorna talked a little bit about revenue bonds, and I think Rick did too. They are sold from anywhere from 20 to 30 year payback periods. As part of your bond, you have to do what's called a disclosure statement, and you have to satisfy them that you have the water rights. They always want that addressed, that you have the adequate water rights in order to build the facilities that they are loaning you money to do. And for us, that pipeline it replaces an existing pipeline and also provides for future growth for Salem.
Okay, thank you. Let me wrap it up.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted to say one last thing.
Okay.
Please don't sweep us all in order to achieve perhaps what are maybe significant issues in smaller areas of the state. We stand ready to work on trying to reach a suitable compromise.
I appreciate that. That's what I've told all parties in this. I think it's very important to have a bill on this issue. I intend to pass a bill on this issue. We just need to figure out what it looks like. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Dave Moskowitz, I think you're the last one. Do you have anything new to add, to bring us home?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's quite a burden, actually, to have that charge, but I'll do my best to at least not take much time if I'm being redundant, and I had to step out earlier, so I missed some testimony. For the record, my name is David Moskowitz with the Wild Salmon Center. We're a wild salmon conservation organization based in Portland, Oregon. This bill is important for Oregon in terms of allowing planning in the future to occur wisely, but that planning has to take into account the natural systems around which most of our cities have grown. There was a testimony handed out by the Oregon AFSCME, and their last line is vote yes to ensure a reliable supply of clean water and continued growth of jobs and the economy. And in places like Portland, in places like 10 Mile Creek or the Chetco and Brookings Bend, people are moving there. The reason that these places are growing and will continue to grow is because Oregon's a great place to live because there's great natural amenities. And part of that are rivers that have water in them that support salmon. So this allowing municipalities to plan for their water supply can be addressed with this bill, but in its current form, it doesn't allow for us to take a new snapshot. An extension of time to develop these rights, we've learned, is probably essential. But when you do a public interest determination at the time of the application and you aren't developing your right for 10, 15, 20, 30 years or even longer, when you're actually going to take that water out of the system, if you've got to be able to take another snapshot. Not taking that snapshot...
I need to go in about 30 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, that's about all I have. Not taking that is against the public interest because the conditions do change. The needs of cities have to be balanced with fish and rivers. The time limit on extension period, there has to be a time limit, whether it's 10 or 20 years, there has to be a time limit. You've got to consider the impacts of the development, continued development on fish and rivers. It's consideration of that impact. That's what we're asking for. And this bill, it should be able to be amended to reflect that. This is an environmental issue. That was one reason that apparently it passed the House. People didn't feel like it was an environmental issue. But this is really the essence of the environmental issues and how Oregon considers that in the future. It's not a no-growth position that we're taking. It's simply let's consider all these factors.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. That closes the public hearing on House Bill 3038, and we're adjourned.